Hey there, welcome to another episode of Film Streak. This episode is a little bit different. If you've heard the last two, you know that we've been covering some films here at the Houston Latino Film Festival, and this is the seventh annual festival, and as I've said before, I'm proud to be part of this and know these guys and know the crew here and know everything that they're trying to do, bring Latino films to Houston. And so I hope you enjoyed talking about those films in the previous episodes, but here, this episode, I want to do something different. We're going to talk about, actually, we're not going to talk about anything. I'm going to let these filmmakers talk about their films and their experiences and how they're liking the festival. Just kind of get their side of it. You know, we could talk about the stories of the films and the subject matter, but I really wanted to go into a little bit more of their creative process and the challenges that they might have hit. And if you're a filmmaker, if any filmmakers out there are interested in this kind of thing, this might be a good place to get an idea of what it takes to make a film like this, whether it's a short film or a feature film, whether it's a documentary or narrative. And then how do you get that into a festival? And what's that experience like? So hopefully this grab bag of interviews, this might give you an idea of how that goes. Now, the audio is going to be a little crazy because this was taken at random times during the festival. So it'll be a little hit or miss, but hopefully you can make it out and enjoy it all the same. So let's roll it. So I am here with
Rodrigo Reyes.
And the name of your film?
Sansón and Me.
Okay.
Sansón y Yo.
First of all, I just want to say thanks for taking a minute. The film's really great. We screened it here. And I want to ask you a few questions about the filmmaking process. Specifically with this type of film, it's a very unique approach to a documentary. And can you tell me a little bit about the thinking there, the decision to do this, this documentary this way?
Yeah, and so for folks who are listening, Sansón y Yo tells the story of my friendship with my friend Sansón, who's doing life without parole. I met him when I was his interpreter, and we set off to make this film. And what's really interesting is that the system never gave us a chance to interview him, to talk to him on camera. There's no archive, right? So there were all these challenges that basically were pushing us to say, hey, go make a movie about someone else. Go make a movie about a different type of prisoner, someone easier maybe, someone that's a hero to the Latino community or something. And you realize, man, like, that's the system. The system is controlling my friend's story. He was 19 years old. He was convicted to life without parole for being a driver. I mean, that's ridiculous. Mm-hmm. And so we started looking for solutions, right? And over the years, it took like 10 years to make this film. We wrote letters, right? That's how we stayed in touch, like, you know, and that's where we talked about the really deep stuff. We got really deep with our relationship through the letters. Mm-hmm. And I realized one day, man, like, I have all these letters. There's got to be some solution to bringing them to life. And I reread them all. Like, I'm talking like 400 pages or something. This is back like 5 years ago. So now there's probably like 1,000. But in his very first letter to me, he said, man, how are you going to tell my story? Like, there's nothing, you know, out there about me. Are you going to get an actor? It'd be really cool if they let me act in the movie. You think they would do that? You know, I don't think the prisoners, prison authorities are going to do that.
Ha-ha. Sure, sure.
And so I said, wait a minute, Sansón, maybe not you, but maybe your family who's still around and they're in Mexico and they can't visit you, maybe they can help you bring your memories to life, right? Mm-hmm. Because we had all these family members that could play his memories, like mm-hmm. his own mm-hmm. nephew could play him, and he looks like him, right. And his sister could play his mom. And so that's what we did. And so the film becomes very magical like that, because you're seeing his family reenact his memories and bring them to life. And you're also processing like how trauma works for people who are incarcerated, right. You know, like you're seeing like, oh man, like, this thing is alive. It's alive in the memories of people. And it's not just one moment that things went wrong. Things went wrong for a very long time before a kid gets, you know, in trouble and gets sentenced to something like this. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that's an interesting point. I want to touch on that. Having his family involved with this, it's even, there are portions of the film where it's addressed that this is hard for them. And can you maybe talk a little bit more about you know, the lengths that you had to kind of go to maybe get them involved and get their cooperation.
Yeah, at first it was just like a great idea, and it's like, okay, the movie's going to start moving because now we have a solution, and the family was ready to act, and Sansón asked them to be a part of it. But then very quickly we realized, man, like, we're reliving trauma, and that's mm-hmm. painful.
Right.
And Sansón kind of checks me in the movie, and he says, hey, man, like, this was really a lot more painful than I thought. You know, it's not fun. It's actually hard. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I need you to be aware of this. I'm kind of thinking of not doing the movie anymore. And so we had to process that. And I think that's important for audiences to see that, because behind that is the reason why we don't really talk about these social problems in a meaningful way, right? It's mm-hmm. always black and white, mm-hmm. blue or red. And it's like, man, if you want to understand how to stop the prison pipeline and stop these kids from getting caught up in the system, you have to be willing to listen, right? And mm-hmm. so that was hard, you know? And I left it in the film. I didn't hide it. I wanted us to think about that. But then the film keeps growing, right? And Sansón keeps growing up, and our relationship keeps becoming stronger. And he gets past that, you know? And so does the family.
I commend you on that, because it's kind of a bold move. It's a bold choice to say, well, we didn't just easily make this film. There were challenges, even with just cooperating with the family, and even him maybe having his own doubts or resistance to it. And to leave that in there, that shows that there's challenges all around for this young man and for you as the filmmaker trying to tell this story. And so, you know, one other thing, watching the film, I'm curious, is what kind of resistance or pushback have you gotten from this kind of
a
story?
That's a great follow-up question. So when I was making the film, I would get pushback around, this idea of, like, you picked a guy who is not a saint. He's not completely innocent. You're making Latinos look bad, right? Like, we get that nagging. It's almost like this thing that we have in our culture where people are, like, embarrassed. And embarrassment is the number one priority. Don't embarrass me. Even if you kind of have to be embarrassed to get through and to fix the problem.
To face,
exactly.
To confront. Yeah.
There's thousands of kids like Sansón, mm-hmm. thousands and thousands across the country that are doing life without parole. Mm-hmm. We're not talking about them. Why? Because we're embarrassed because they make Latinos look bad? You know, it's ridiculous. And that pushback, I think, to me, you know, it was very disappointing. But then I would think, well, how am I going to say that to my friend? I'm going to write him a letter and say, hey, man, your story makes us look bad as a people, so I'm sorry. I got to find a nicer story after you've committed to me, after you've trusted me. So I felt that his story was important because it wasn't being told. And because he committed to me, mm-hmm. I had to keep my word, right?
Sure.
And, like, that's what kept me going. And now that the film is out in the world, you see that people are like, oh, man, that happened to my cousin. That happened to my uncle. That happened to my dad. That happened to me, right? Like, I've had people, formerly incarcerated people, who've seen it and said, hey, you know, that's exactly the process I went through, trying to figure out what happened to my life that got me inside, right? That's the process I went through to build hope and to build a life for myself inside. And so I'm very happy that the value of the film is not in question. And maybe many people in our community will ask themselves, hey, like, we kind of have to start listening to why these kids keep going to prison, right?
Yeah, for as many people, and this is my take on it, but I think for as many people who might say, we don't want to show that, we don't want to see that, there are just as many people who relate to that and who identify with that experience either directly or through family or people they know in their life. And that's why I agree. It is important to show this kind of a story. And I think the approach that you took to it is certainly unique enough where it's not just a straight through and through documentary, and it's not a narrative. You know, it's not a fictional piece. You really incorporate the reality of it, even showing, you know, where he's from and the life and the home setting that he had. So with that in mind, are there any maybe lessons just overall from making the film, whether it's handling a subject or handling a person at the core of the film? Any lessons you take away from that?
Yeah, I think the style of the film for me, it feels very engaging, right? Like yeah. You should feel like you're like, wow, I'm writing on this story and it's got highs and lows and it's dramatic and it's intense. It's not your average documentary where you feel like you're like eating your cereal or something and learning something for homework. It's really about being in his life. And I took a lot of inspiration in like this idea of like there's a deeper truth. It's not just the facts. It's also like the emotions, mm-hmm. right? And collaborating with Sansón and making him like uplifting his voice, right? In his letters, he writes with a lot of poetry. He writes with a lot of style. You know, he's got a point of view of the world. Mm-hmm. And I wanted the film to feel like that. Like you're hearing a story. Yeah. Is the story completely 100% fact? Well, it's his memories. It's right. It's almost like you know, in Latino culture, we have corridos, right? Mm-hmm. In Mexican culture. Mm-hmm. The film is very much like a corrido, you know, and a good corrido is based on fact, mm-hmm. but it's also a little bit of a legend, right? Sure. It's a little bit of a myth.
Yeah.
And that's what makes it cool, right? That's what makes it special.
Yeah.
And I felt the film had to bring that into the style, you know, so that you walk away really kind of with more like that inspiration, that dreaminess, you know, of his life, and you still feel like you got to know him.
How important was that? So I know there's a point in the film where you have to address that he hasn't been in touch with you after some time. And was that a possible issue, like with continuing the film or getting it finished?
Yeah, it was an issue. I mean, at some point we were starting to disagree and he was starting to question, hey, should I make this film? But I think if you go back to what it takes to be a friend with somebody, like our really close friends, I don't think there's anyone who has not fought mm-hmm. with their best friend.
Sure.
That's why they're your best friend, because they get really close to you and they can hurt, right? And so we work with that, with Sansón. We worked on it, and he regained trust in me, and I, also regained trust in him, because the film also pushes him to confront the things right. that he doesn't really want to acknowledge around his situation and his case. You know, I tell him some hard truths in the film too, but mm-hmm. but it's all with love, and I think that's the magic. You know, that we were able to become friends. And I think if you're Latino, especially, you know how divided our community is by class and race.
Yeah.
It's really hard for people to be friends across those lines.
Sure.
And me and Sansón becoming friends is really important. You know, that's what the film is about. And it was a process. It was hard, you know, but ultimately I think we're all good, right? Like we both kind of grew up with this film. He taught me a lot and I taught him something.
Great.
So we can continue to build together. I'm actually going to go see him next weekend.
Wow.
And he's going to be so happy to hear that I was here in Houston.
Okay. Okay.
You know, like yeah. that the film is traveling. He's like, oh, what did people say there? Oh yeah. Like, and who went, you know, like, you know what I'm saying?
That's great. I mean, I certainly hope you're getting good feedback and seeing the reception that it's getting. That makes me think, one last thing, the difference, you know, it's touched on a little bit in the film, but the difference in where he came from and his life and you
yeah.
and your life, maybe that's not some, I mean, there's moments in the film where we see a little bit of that, but has that affected maybe how you look at telling a story when you're, you know, approaching a subject matter or a way of life that's really different?
Well, I think the first thing is to acknowledge that there is that difference and that you have a certain power by making a movie. You know, you're not neutral. Mm-hmm. You can edit that out, you can cut it out, you can hide it from the audience, but you're not neutral. And you have to acknowledge that and bring that respect to people and to their experience. So, like, when you watch the film, you don't get a sense of anything that could really put Sansón in danger inside, right? Like,
right.
prison's a dangerous place.
Right.
We erased all that because he said, hey, I want you to keep in mind where I am and all that.
Yeah,
so
of course.
That kind of collaboration is important. But at the end of the day, you have to be an artist, right?
Yeah.
Like, and artists are important. And it's really critical that we as a community support our artists telling stories that are, you know, that are not comfortable sometimes.
Yeah,
you
have to have a point of view. I understand.
Exactly.
Like you can't be totally objective, just a fly on the wall.
Yeah.
You do have to convey the message you're trying to convey.
Exactly.
And so with that in mind, I think the film does a really interesting, unique, just very non-conventional way of telling this story. And I'm glad you're here at the festival. I hope you're having a good time here. Any other thoughts you want to say about your film?
I would just say, you know, I love coming to Houston. It's my second year in a row.
Right.
So I'm just very happy. Audiences here are super intelligent. They're bright. They open up their hearts to the films. The conversations are always great. And I just wish you many more years of a festival.
All right. Yeah. Great. Sounds good. I thank you for your time, Rodrigo.
Take care.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Yeah.
All right, so I'm here with
Jason Leal.
And with your film?
It's In the Forests of Nicene Marks.
All right, so Jason, first off, I just want to say we've known each other for a little while, right?
Yeah,
seen
absolutely.
You here and there, or we've seen each other around the Houston area. But I know that you are particularly committed as a filmmaker to seeing something through. And
sure,
that's one of the big questions I have for you with regard to this film. You know, this was a film that I remember hearing you started a few years ago.
Yeah.
So tell me a little bit about the complications and the challenges you had because of the pandemic trying to get this film made.
Yeah. Well, the movie kind of just started out as a Facebook post. And I was like, I want to do a script. I want somebody to send me in a short film script. Just something quick and easy. This is about March 2020, and I thought it was going to be done in about 6 months, but Rosemary Griggs, I met her at Austin Film Festival, and you know, she sent me a short film script, and it was amazing. And I was like, I could see myself making this, and let's just do this.
Yeah.
And it was set in San Francisco, so I was like, I'll go to San Francisco and shoot a film. I mean, right. That's a dream of mine, to go to California and make a movie. So I was like, let's do it. And then she found producing partners, a whole, like a collective. And they have a film collective over there. It's called the Encounters Film Collective.
Okay.
We had six producers on the film. So the collective brought on department heads, cinematographer, editor, like assistant director, right, and a couple of other producers, who all just kind of came on, and they all became producers. So there was seven producers total. It was me, Rosemary, David Usner, Antonio Forenza, Vanessa Landon, Bill Shoup, and Stuart Locklear. Okay. So I was like, oh man, we've got this done. So we started kind of working on the script. We had a lot of, you know, decisions we had to work through. You know, then the pandemic hit. And we really didn't think we were gonna finish. We were just like, okay, let's just forget about this. I was like, dude, come on, let's just do it.
Yeah.
I've been through worse stuff than this. I've overcome that on my past four projects, and I just kept pushing. And you know, we found the locations, we did the research, and we found the cast and everything. And we're like, okay, we're ready to go. Let's just shoot in October. I know there's a lot of like restrictions and stuff, but I'll fly over there. And then we're just about to shoot, and then it got kind of pretty hot in the COVID started flaring up in the wintertime, and then we push it back, and then we had other changes and stuff, and then we finally filmed it the following October. But basically, we wouldn't have done it unless, like, I said, hey, let's just pull the trigger on this Kickstarter. And then we did it. Not everybody was ready for it, but we did it, and we raised the money. And then I said, look, I'm buying a ticket. We're going. I bought a ticket. I had to cancel the ticket, and we pushed back the ticket a year.
Yeah.
And so I finally flew up there, and then we finally we finally shot it.
That sounds like a journey. I mean, that's right? That's so I mean, you mentioned something, the cast, and
yes,
you know, the story of this film, from what I understand, right, it's essentially it's an all deaf cast.
Yeah.
So
pretty much all deaf.
What kind
cast.
Of challenges did you have with that? Like, just as a director, as
well, I think that the deaf cast wasn't even really that big of an issue.
Really?
It turned out to be. COVID turned out to be a bigger issue than that.
Of course, sure.
But whenever you're working with a deaf cast, yeah, you have to have an interpreter to really understand them. And we had two amazing interpreters. One was Bernard Buford, and the other one was Roberto Santiago.
Okay.
I think the films you've done that I've seen, they have a deeper meaning always, it seems like. I feel like there's more to them. You're great at putting layers to things and giving it depth and humanity that maybe is not on the surface, you know? But I appreciate the work that you do. So, you know, the fact that you've got another film here again, I mean, you've got... How many films now have you had at the Houston Latino Film Festival?
They played all five of my films.
Okay.
So five.
So there you go.
And I was at the first Houston Latino Film Festival.
Okay.
Yeah.
So... Jason, I know you know, we're in the middle of the party here, so I just wanted to have you come on, talk about your film for a minute. Any other thoughts you want to share? I mean,
it's the story of a family that lives off the grid. It's called In the Forest of Nicene Marks. It's a story about a family that lives off the grid, and they're clown performers, and they juggle and do magic tricks over in San Francisco for money. They kind of have special powers, but they're all deaf, and the daughter's a coda. She can actually speak, but she signs with her parents, but she prefers actually not to speak.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a story about a girl kind of like losing her family, which is why I gravitated towards it. Mm-hmm. So it's got some meaning to me, and I hope other people who see it.
Exactly.
But yeah, I mean, it's all a process. I mean, you just keep working. I mean, I loved making the film.
Yeah.
You know, it was a joy to make it. It was a joy to go to California to make it. It was a joy to meet all the producers that we had and work with them.
How was that? Was that a grind going back and forth?
Or? Oh, yeah. I mean, it's horrible to not be able to rehearse in person.
Right.
But you know, we did as much rehearsal as we could, and we had a few Zoom meetings. Then we went out there, and you know, we did it. And working with a kid, you know, I mean, it's, you know, to get them there in that emotional state is tough.
Sure.
So that was a challenge, and then editing was the challenge. Everything is a challenge, but it's a lot of fun.
Okay.
Fun work.
Well, good. Congratulations again, being here at the festival.
Yeah.
I mean, it's always good to see you.
Yeah.
Good to see you around.
You too, Robert.
No, you're still doing it, so.
Yeah, I'm working on another. Hopefully the next one will be a feature.
Okay.
Maybe a short, I don't know, but I'm going to do either a feature or a short this year. So.
Okay. Well, great, man. Thanks for stopping over here for a minute. I appreciate
it,
buddy.
All right. Thank you so much. All right, Robert.
All right, so I'm here with...
My name is Sofia Jaramillo.
Okay, and the film you're with?
Waiting for Change.
All right, and that's part of our Houston Hitters short film block. This is the last day of the film festival, and this is where usually our Houston filmmakers or stories about Houston get a showcase. So tell me a little bit about how you came into contact with JR or his story and decided to make a film about it.
Yeah, Junior is my best friend. We've known each other for about 5 years, and we're both creatives, and we really wanted to make a film. So at first we were like, oh, maybe it's about fly fishing, because we both like fly fishing. Maybe it's about like the ecosystem we live in Jackson, Wyoming. And then I started talking to him about his story and what it was like for him to come from Houston to Jackson, Wyoming. And I was like, oh, you're the character. We gotta make the film about you.
Okay.
So that's kind of what happened.
Okay. And that's a JR. His name is Junior. So that's interesting, because I was curious watching the film. It seemed like a very interesting story. I wasn't sure where the connection came from, but that's so you guys knew each other. Oh, great. So did you know about like his background here in Houston and the environment or the just the difference in scenery?
Yeah, I didn't know about that as first. Okay. At first as much. Like, yeah. I heard a little bit about Houston, but it really wasn't until... at first, the story was just going to be about Junior, what it's like for him as a Mexican-American living in a predominantly white mountain town and fly fishing. Mm-hmm. And then we had him write a little script, like a one-page kind of script, mm-hmm. where he told his story, and half of the page was about Houston. Ah. So we're like... okay, we gotta go to Houston. Yeah.
Okay.
And we knew it was really important to his story, and his family was as well, and that's why we filmed here too.
Okay. So were there any challenges with that, of shooting in one location, one part of the country, and then picking up, or did you kind of...
I think...
How'd you juggle that?
The biggest challenges was funding.
Really?
To get down here.
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Also, like, hurricanes are a thing here, so yep. It was kind of hard to plan when to come.
Right.
So, yeah, like, funding was the biggest thing, because once we realized we had to go to Houston, we were like, oh, this is going to be a much bigger project than we anticipated. Mm-hmm. When we first started out, we pitched it as a 2-minute short video.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. So the focus on fly fishing, is that's mostly, I assume, because that's just a passion of his, and okay.
Yeah, Junior is a really big fly fisherman, and he taught me how to fly fish, and I see him teaching our community of Latinos in Jackson how to fly fish, and yeah, that's why we focused on it.
Okay, because the film really conveys that it is a relaxing type of activity, and you know, when you, there are scenes in the film where Junior and his family are in Galveston, and... fishing at the beach is a very different...
Yeah, chaotic, right?
It's a very different experience, yeah. So that's kind of what I'm wondering, is knowing the difference there, did that inform anything about how you shot the film or just structured it even?
Oh, certainly. I think that for me, looking at it as a director, I saw one of the strongest parts of the story being those differences and the juxtaposition between, just like what you're saying, like... fishing with family is wild, and you're neck deep in water, right?
Yep.
And then in Jackson, you're solo, and you're alone, and it's about solitude.
Right.
So, yeah. And honestly, that is a big reflection of what Junior's life has been like.
Okay.
Like here, he's been completely surrounded by his community of color, his family. And then in Jackson, he's one of the very few Latinos on the water,
right. If
not the only.
Okay. And I'm sure that is a very important goal of the film overall, is showing that or representing.
Yeah, I mean, I think that both of us understand, and I understood a lot deeply through Junior's story, that family is extremely important to us as Latinos. Mm-hmm. So not showing that would do his story a disjustice,
right.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think that's also something that I really want my white friends to see, to understand, like, why is it so hard to leave home? Well, it's hard to leave home when you're extremely connected to your family, and they are like so much a part of your heart that without them your heart feels broken.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a place of comfort, it's a place of stability, and sometimes you're kind of just drawn there and you don't even know why.
Yeah.
And so talking to Junior and hearing his experience with that, was that a similar experience to you that you could relate to, or?
Yeah, certainly. I am Colombian American, so my dad is from Colombia and my mom is from Idaho.
Mm-hmm.
My dad's entire family and my dad live in Colombia.
Okay.
And that's been kind of a theme of my whole life, like being far away from my family there.
Okay.
Which has been really hard, but I know those moments when I can connect with them are so valuable, and I could see that in Junior's story as well.
Okay, got it. So it's a very kind of almost a kinship there.
Yeah.
With the experience and telling this kind of story.
Mm-hmm.
So great. So Sophia, that's really all I had. I just wanted to get a few thoughts on the film, and I hope you're enjoying the festival. And
did you
get
to see this festival.
Did you get to see some other films?
Yeah. Wow. Gods of Mexico.
Whew. Yeah. Yeah.
Blew my mind yesterday.
Totally.
That was amazing.
For
sure.
That'll
be in my head for like for the whole year.
Yeah. Yeah. So great work here, and including yours. So I hope you enjoy. If you're going to check out anything else, hope you enjoy it. And thanks for talking with me.
Yeah. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right, so I'm here with...
Junior Rodriguez.
Okay, and the name of your film...
is Waiting for Change.
All right, and that's part of our Houston Hitters short film block.
here on the last day of the Houston Latino Film Festival, and a couple things that came to mind, and I asked the cinematographer Mason about it, is the juxtaposition of these locations. You know, this is obviously a part of, this is a film about your story.
Right.
So, capturing that on film, how important was that to you versus maybe where you are in now, Wyoming?
Yeah.
Capturing the difference.
Yeah. It was really important because when we started, we had a voiceover, and I talk a lot about the reef and Galveston, and the crew literally couldn't imagine what I was saying because I was saying Galveston is hot and muggy. Okay. It's like, so y'all were like having fun? It's like, nah, we were kind of like sweating and like it smelled funny.
So no frame of reference.
Yeah, there was nothing. Okay. They couldn't really understand.
Yeah.
And on stage I talked about the reef, and the reef is really mm-hmm. a special place that's gone now, and it's on the south side. It was on the south side of Houston. Mm-hmm. And it was just crystal clear water, and like you just didn't find that in Houston. Like you can't find that now, and it's really sad. But you know, that was a benchmark for me experiencing the outdoors with my family.
And so the locations that you're in, we're talking about Galveston, you're talking about Houston, Wyoming. These are all locations that you're entirely familiar with. Your family is here in Houston, right?
Yeah.
And so what has that been like, just here in the screening with your family? How many family members do you have here today?
I think we had to get like 23 tickets.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for my family.
So you've got a big representation here.
Yeah, my family drove down from Fort Worth, which means a lot.
Yeah.
That's what I meant on stage as well, that like my family lives in Fort Worth, so okay. when they came down, yeah. they always wanted to go to the beach, so we would always go to Galveston.
Okay. Yeah.
We would always go to Galveston for Easter in the summer. We would go to the reef as well. It meant a lot, and I wish that, you know, they could have been in the film as well, because it's hard to just sort of show a piece of my family when it's like really everyone that sort of made who I am.
When you have family that's watching this on screen, can you kind of gauge what the feeling is? Or is it a little bit of nerves?
It's a lot of nerves because, yeah. you know, like not everybody like made it into the film, but everybody sure. was interviewed.
And it's your story, so I'm sure there's a part of it where...
Well, that's the whole thing that I'm yeah. trying to get across, that it's not... My story is their story. Like, I'm not... I'm a reflection of them, and I wanted them to be in it because I am them. Like this person that you see or that you see in the film, like it's my tias, it's my tios, it's my cousins, it's all, it's the cousins I don't know, it's the future cousins.
I hear you, yeah. I hear you. So I actually, I really appreciate that aspect of the film of showing not only that where you're from and the area and the family you grew up with, but also taking your family to Wyoming.
Yeah.
And the efforts you're making there. So I think that's a big part of the film. I assume that's a big goal of the film, right?
Yeah, yeah,
so
it is.
So can you talk about that?
Like, yeah, trying to get the family out there, trying to get them to understand my whole lifestyle, because I'm the only one that kind of went away.
Okay.
Like my other three brothers, they live here in Houston. My okay. two sisters, they live in here in Houston. My cousins live here. Like everybody is in Houston or Fort Worth yeah. or Del Rio, and I'm the like odd one that kind of went away at 18, like went to school in Portland, kind of mm-hmm. never came back mm-hmm. until I was about 26, 27. I tried to live here to be closer because my niece was born, and it was just too hot. And
yeah.
the outdoor access, there's outdoors here, but it's just a little different.
It's very different.
It's very different. Yeah. And I need that sort of, I don't know, the more like aggressive nature that's out
yeah.
there than
yeah.
like... We took Mason and Sophia to the Houston Museum of Natural Science, and they were kind of blown away by how many trees there are. Mm. They're like, it's so green here. Like, there's so many oak. It's like, yeah, what did you think Houston was? Yeah. I think it's so funny what gets projected, because in Jackson, same idea, you know, this like beautiful landscape gets projected out into the world. But if you live there, like, it's not a great place for Latinos. It's not a great place if you're non-white. It's not a great place if you don't have money. Like, it's a hard life up there.
Okay. And that's what I mean. That's a big part of, I think, what seems like the goal of the film is to show the difference.
Exactly.
And whether it can be changed. And I feel like your film here is a part of doing that, is showing that, you know,
shining a light on it.
Yeah.
And hopefully some more representation or just a different, a more diverse community that can happen there,
yeah,
if that's possible.
Yeah, totally.
So, because it's certainly the case here in Houston. You know, we're here at the festival, and I'm sure you saw all the films in your block,
yeah,
here, but
yeah,
did you see any others?
Yeah, yeah. The films before, Greenwater. Oh my God, Greenwater.
Yeah, so
that one hit.
Great films here, and so I appreciate you taking a few minutes to share your film and to talk with us here. So,
yeah, thank you, Robert.
Thanks again,
appreciate
JR.
It. Yeah.
Appreciate it. You have a good day.
You too.
All
thanks.
Right. I'm here with
Danny Geraldo Martinez.
All right. And Danny, your film is
Lilith.
And your film screened here as part of a block with filmmakers from Texas.
That's right.
Right? We're here at the Houston Latino Film Festival. And
yeah,
how has your experience been just in the short time you've been here?
So far, I must admit, this is one of the most welcoming festivals that I've ever attended.
Really?
This is the first time that I've done the festival circuit. And to me, this has just been the most exciting one so far, from everything about it, the crew and the location, the city, the people. It's been great.
Oh, great, great. That's great to hear. So this is your first experience with festivals.
Yes.
Is this your first short?
It certainly is. I've been involved in the San Antonio film community since 2011, 2012.
Okay.
Just assisting on other projects, friends of mine projects, whether it was screenwriting or doing production assistant work. But this was my first directorial project.
Okay.
Indeed.
What kind of challenges as a first time director?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of challenges did you hit that maybe you hadn't seen or been witness to?
Yeah, right. They were, I suppose, mostly logistical, because mm-hmm. I had a certain budget that I had planned for only 2 days of shooting. But when we were on set, it ended up being 3 days of shooting. So I didn't plan it all the way through. And thankfully, I had a wonderful assistant director who was reminding me, hey, Danny, we're going to have to take this to 3 days. And sure enough, we did. But the great thing about that was that the crew that were assisting me in the making of Lilith, they believed in the story. They liked what was happening. And so I sort of gained their trust. So when the time came for me to ask, hey, were you guys willing to do a third day? Everyone said yes. So that was a little bit of a challenge to kind of hurdle around. But again, it's all just really about having trust in your crew and trying to maintain trust in them.
I think that's important. I mean, we have a lot of short filmmakers.
Yeah.
And you know, the idea that everyone's going to hit challenges, they're going to learn some new things.
Absolutely.
Whether it's dealing with production, scheduling,
yes,
casting.
Yeah. Scheduling, and there were a couple of, production errors that I didn't see until we arrived at post-production.
Mm-hmm.
And there were a couple moments when I told myself, gosh, like, how did I not see that on set? But, of course, it was a great learning experience for me, and I think that's what I really needed to, experience. So going forward, I know not to, encounter and go, and have those same experiences again.
And in terms of directing, if that's a role that's new to you, like, have you found comfort in that role, or is it still something you want to? I mean, everybody wants to get better.
Of course, yeah. Well, I think at the core of it, I like to consider myself more of a storyteller.
Mm-hmm.
I've always just loved telling stories, ever since I was, a kid in my teens. Just and they were usually more along the lines of paranormal, ghost stories, supernatural stories. So. I think really I just reminded myself, hey, I had to just continue to engage myself as a storyteller and remind everyone on board that, hey, this is a story. Please assist me and help me to convey, this message and this theme and this whole story. And it's the beauty of collaboration while you're on set as a filmmaker. And yeah, that certainly was, incredible experience to go through.
Also, in terms of genre, right? Yeah. So your film here kind of works in different genres, or is more of a genre film than, let's say, something that's...
It certainly is.
It's not a kitchen sink drama.
No,
right?
Yeah, it certainly is. I mean, I know I wanted to go up more of that thriller alley.
And how does that, in terms of the story and your approach to telling the story, did you find maybe certain inspiration or influences? That
certainly,
you,
no. Okay. I think this was my tribute to old thriller shows such as The Twilight Zone, and Tales from the Dark Side, and Tales from the Crypt. And I just wanted to give a spin on that classic tale of character meets ultimate evil, and there's a bargaining situation taking place. So, okay. You know, it was just basically, just seeing things that I grew up with and things that I was inspired by, and trying to sort of test myself if I can maybe curate something on that level.
Okay.
You know?
Okay.
Yeah.
And are there any, let's say, any particular stylistic choices that you found making that that were informed by actual production versus like, well, I have this idea.
Yeah, no. Thankfully, my DP, Pablo Veliz, he read the script and he was able to provide me certain lighting and aesthetic techniques that I had no idea about, ones that were not in my head while I was writing it. So, again, it's just that beauty of collaboration. So when I approached Pablo with the script, he said, well, why don't we, because he asked me, it was like, you want to go this way, you want it to be a thriller, and you want it to be about, you know, this evil entity. Why don't we sort of change the layout and change the environment and really turn it into some sort of personal hell? And hence, there were a lot of red lighting involved. Mm-hmm. And again, it's just about the trust, working with, you know, the people.
That's good, yeah. That's
that
definitely
you bring
a
on board.
Key thing.
Yeah.
Especially with shorts, because you're on a tighter schedule, tighter resources.
Right.
And even people, you're tight on people sometimes. So everyone's really got to pull their weight and contribute. And
it's great. And you need to allow yourself to say yes. And you need to allow yourself to, you know, be willing to collaborate with their ideas.
Yeah.
And I've never really been an artist where I'm just concerned with my approach to it. I want... you know, everyone's input into it, especially the people that I'm working with. So my DP, he was able to integrate a certain stylistic visual to it, and I allowed my actors to improv and to really get into, the shoes into the characters and allow them to breathe and allow them to, like, you know, curate it, you know, their own sort of unique style to it. So, and at the end, it all just worked out, you know, just beautifully.
That's great. I mean, I subscribe to that too. It's kind of like the best idea wins, right? It doesn't matter where it comes from, who it comes from.
Yeah.
As long as it helps make the project better.
If we're all on the same level, then let's just do it, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So great, great. That's the questions I have for you. I appreciate you taking a few minutes here. We're here at the festival, and, hey, enjoy the rest of the festival.
I shall.
I'll see you around. But
thank you for this opportunity.
Thanks for stopping and talking with us for a minute. So.
I mean, absolutely, man. Anytime.
All right.
Thank you so much again.
Sure. All right. So I am here with...
Justin Rodriguez.
Justin Rodriguez. And what's the name of your film?
Producer and editor for the film Lilith, playing here at Houston Latino Film Festival.
All right, thanks. Welcome to the festival, by the way. Hope you're having a good time here.
It's an amazing time.
Just a couple questions. With your experience on this film, I understand you've got some experience with short films and just the whole process, but was there anything particularly challenging or new to working on this film?
This film, I guess the most challenging part that was like it took place in like the dead winter, right? Yeah, it took place in the dead winter.
Okay.
And we shot in San Antonio, which was, crazy cold. And, like, it was, some San Antonio houses don't have central air. So get this, One time, like everybody in the cast and crew was so cold that we turned on the oven and just like opened the thing so everybody could just get warm. I think that was probably the most challenging thing. Other than that, it was just like a blast. You know, okay. I love shooting film.
Okay, great, great. And in terms of editing, I assume you practice at that, or you've got a background in that? Or?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, so I edit all of my films personally, and okay. This is the first time where I was editing somebody else's film, which was really? The director, Danny Martinez.
Sure.
And so we collaborated, and so I edited that, and it was just such a fun process to edit with somebody else.
So, and what is it like editing to someone else's vision,
direction? That's a great question. Like, some people don't know how collaborative it is, you know, because everybody likes to take control of their own thing, but it's a great learning process to learn with other people, you know. So, we came into a perfect, a perfect middle ground. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the film turned out to be amazing, and now we're here at Houston Latino Film Festival.
Right, yeah, of course.
So it worked out.
Great. So, and since you're maybe a little more, you've got a few under your belt, how has it been kind of going through this process with this film? Yeah. Being a part of it, obviously, but... Yeah. Helping usher it through the process? Has that been a part of it?
Yeah. So, like, Danny's a great director, and this is his first short film. Right. So I was kind of telling him, like, hey, man, like, they might be looking for this. Like, let's trim it down a little bit. Like, stuff like that, you know, like, which ended up helping the film. And, you know, every editor has, like, their own thing about, like, killing, you know, trimming the fat. And,
right.
Like, you know, you have your first edit, and it's probably, like, 30 minutes long, and sometimes you got to go to down and a half, so like, you know, just trying to get there is a very fun process, and I think that's the best, you know, thing that I'm great at, and it's just been a lot of fun.
Oh, great. So, and you're pleased with the final product, I'm sure?
Yeah, especially watching it today on the block. Yeah, I was like, wow, yeah, like, played really well. Everybody enjoyed it.
And so the festival experience even, so having your film screened and being able to see not only how your work turned out, but even see what other filmmakers are doing, I'm sure
that's the best part. Like, one of the best parts of coming to film festivals is watching these, like, undiscovered gems. Maybe no one, like, you know, like, it's hard to see, you know, like, some people will never know about them, but you should know about them. And it's, like, one of my favorite parts is watching other people's work. Yeah. And it's a very, very amazing, you know, community. And you get to meet these people, and you get to see what everybody else is doing. And it's a really good thing for a filmmaker to discover.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's entirely the purpose of this festival, is to connect people, celebrate these kinds of stories, these kinds of filmmakers.
Oh, yeah.
And just, you know, give you a good experience here. Maybe you can get it at other festivals, but you're getting it here, and it's just for you. It's just for Latino filmmakers and Latino stories. So I appreciate it.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, Justin, for taking a minute.
Absolutely.
Anything else you want to say about your film?
No, I mean, just, it's gonna be out, like, on Vimeo everywhere, and it's just been a lot of fun, like, you know, and just watch the circuit happen, and just watch out for everybody here at Latino Film, you know, Festival, because I think everybody here is, like, the future of filmmaking, especially representing Latino backgrounds.
Yeah.
And it's just an amazing experience.
All right. Well, great. I appreciate it. Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, man. So good.
Okay, so hope you enjoyed those takes from filmmakers and all the people that are required to get some of these works off the ground and get them into festivals, get them in front of audiences. It's a very unique experience for festival goers. You know, I've talked to some people here just attending the event and getting their feedback and getting their point of view on what this is like. You know, Houston isn't necessarily big on film festivals. We're not necessarily an entertainment town, but that's all the more reason to appreciate what the Houston Latino Film Festival is doing here by bringing this experience to Houston and specifically focusing on Latino films and Latino stories. So all that said, you know, I have to thank my special guest, co-host Jesus Blickweed. who really helped me kind of break down some of these films and talk about the great things in them and the great people behind them. And I hope you enjoyed hearing the takes from them, the filmmakers themselves. I also need to congratulate the crew here. There's Dave Sobrero, there's David Cortez, there's Pedro Rivas, and all of the volunteers. You know, the media team here, who I kind of see back and forth running across the festival spot. We've got Abraham, who's doing our DJ. We've got Julio, who's doing video, and all kinds of photographers, Ren, Rafa, everybody else that's here. Kim, and we've got Nina. There's so many people involved with this festival. And I think the idea is that everybody here is humble. Everybody here is down to earth. We really appreciate everybody that has come to the festival. It's great to meet new people. It's great to see people have a good time. And it's kind of like everybody's a little bit of a family here. I've been here, coming here for 7-8 years now, since the beginning. And you see a lot of familiar faces. And if you come, you come check it out. Don't be afraid to say hi and shake someone's hand and get to know the people here behind the festival and then the people also attending. It's a great spot. It's a great community. And I think whether you're making a film or you're just interested in seeing films, you're bound to have a good time. So if you want to find out more about next year's festival or any other events that are coming up, go to HoustonLatinoFilmFestival.org and you can see what else might be showing up there, or sign up for email updates and you get notifications about whenever the next thing is going to drop. And so, look, that's it for me. I appreciate you listening. Thanks for checking this out. My name is Rob. And hey, you want to hear more? Go to filmstreak.com. You can subscribe there. You can sign up to get your own email notifications from that too. I try not to plug you up with too much email, but, you know, we want to make sure you get the content, right? So in the meantime, hey, enjoy yourself. I'm going to go watch some new movies.